Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A new documentary film highlights a local nonprofit and the importance of environmental education. Local author Lovey Ajayi Jones is encouraging kids to speak up and make positive change in her new children's book.
I was not planning to do any of this. I was just trying to teach myself photography.
And looking back at an exhibition of portraits and personalities of gay black men in 1980s Chicago. And now to some of today's top stories. Governor J.B. Pritzker has joined other governors pushing back against proposed federal cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program known as SNAP. In a letter to congressional leaders, they say the proposals, quote, could dramatically restructure SNAP, including shifting a significant amount of the food benefit costs to states. Under the legislation, the work requirement would be increased from 18 to 54-year-olds to be 18 to 64-year-olds, in addition to $92 billion in reduced spending. An estimated 427,000 Illinoisans who depend on the program would lose benefits if passed. Hundreds of mourners gathered to remember fallen Chicago police officer Crystal Rivera today. Here's a bit of what her aunt, Marissa Mercado, said on behalf of her family.
From early on, it was clear serving and protecting were inherently part of her DNA. At family events, she jumped in to help. No need to ever ask. One of my favorite old family videos shows her just like that, present, joyful, and lending a hand. And although she lit up every room she walked in, Crystal carried herself with deep humility. Crystal was raised in a faith-filled home, her father being a preacher, her mother, a woman of strong faith. Those values shaped her.
36-year-old Rivera was on the force for 4 years. She leaves behind a young daughter, Isabella. She was unintentionally shot by her partner during a foot chase in Chatham earlier this month. For more on today's service, please visit our website. 178 Chicago men and women are newly minted Chicago firefighters.
What we do is not just a job, it is a calling. You are stepping into a tradition that is built on trust, sacrifice, and service. Every time you show up in uniform, Chicagoans are counting on you to bring calm to chaos, care to crises, and bravery to danger.
Fire Commissioner Annette Nance Holt was joined by Mayor Brandon Johnson to congratulate the new probationary firefighter EMTs at a graduation ceremony this morning. CFD officials say this class is among the largest in the last 20 years. The recruits have already received their first firehouse assignments and will remain there until the end of the probationary period, getting more on-the-job training with more experienced members of the department. The state's first human case of West Nile virus this year is reported in southern Illinois. The State Department of Public Health says the case is the earliest in Illinois since 2016. West Nile virus is spread to humans through mosquito bites. Most people infected do not develop symptoms, but about 1 in 5 people do, including fever, nausea, headache, and muscle aches. Seniors and those with weakened immune systems are most vulnerable. As you might expect, health officials recommend wearing insect repellent, reporting stagnant water, and using screens on open doors and windows. Up next, a nonprofit bringing some more green and a lot of other colors, too, to the South Side, right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
For years, Southside Blooms has been beautifying neighborhood blocks one flower at a time. In Our Nature, it's a new documentary film. It digs into the nonprofit's work on the south and west sides of the city. It also highlights environmental educators working to plant the seeds of meaningful change. Joining us now are Keelan Blackwell, co-founder of Southside Blooms, and James Parker, director of In Our Nature. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us.
So, James Parker, what inspired you to make this film?
Yeah, I think my co-producer and I, Juliet, we noticed how partisan nature and environmental education had become and how kind of unexpected that was in a way. You know, this thing that we all share in common had become so divisive. And so that kind of set us out on this inquiry for the film and quickly revealed lots of issues of access, you know, for kids to environmental education, both because of parents' politics, but also, of course, a long history of access disparity based on, you know, where you live or where you're growing up. And then, you know, that kind of combined with these alarming statistics about screen time, where we're seeing kids spend 8 hours plus a day on a screen and less than 5 minutes outside. So all of that together kind of begged the question to us, like, what does this mean for the future? And it's not a given that kids will develop a relationship to nature or have an understanding of, you know, our shared dependence on all the natural systems that support us. And so we kind of went into the field. We started working with and listening to a lot of environmental educators across the country. And we really quickly discovered that nature, and especially those who teach with nature, can be some of our most powerful forces for reconnecting across divides, and importantly for building really effective place-based community-led solutions. And of course, that's where the story of Southside Blooms comes in.
Well, yeah, so let's get to the story of Southside Blooms. Keelan Blackwell, tell us a little bit about what it means for you to have the work of Southside Blooms told through film.
Yeah, this is a big deal and amazing opportunity for us. You know, when James first approached us about featuring us in our nature, I mean, it was a pretty much no-brainer. It really helps to put a big spotlight on community-based sustainability work here in Chicago. And we're really ecstatic to really have our youth, who are the real stars of Southside Blooms, to show like what they're doing on the ground every day to transform some of the most dangerous and impoverished neighborhoods in Chicago through sustainable floristry, through sustainable flower farming. So yeah, we're very, very happy to be a part of this.
Keelan, tell us a little bit about the work that the organization does and how that sort of rises to meet some of the concerns that James and the film are addressing.
Yeah, so we're based here in Inglewood on the south side. Our mission is to use sustainability to alleviate inner city poverty, and we do that by trying to establish flowers as an anchor industry to provide jobs for some of the most high-risk youth here in our city, so that there's a viable alternative to the streets that many of our youth are unfortunately being sucked into. So, you know, in terms of like a lot of the themes that the film's touching, you know, we're not only talking about environmental education from an academic perspective, but we're talking about very real bottom-up community development. So it's really showing how, you know, environmentalism is working with youth to solve very real problems. In our case here in the city, to be a counter to crime, to violence, to the blight. You know, we take over vacant lots, we'll turn them into productive flower farms that have solar panels and rainwater catchment systems. So, you know, I really feel like we're bringing a lot of the themes that James talks about in the film to life in a very real and scalable way.
James, you talk about environmental education in the film, and that can mean different things. What do you think were some of the most crucial components that you wanted to get into the movie?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think it kind of ties into a lot of what we're trying to do with this film, which is kind of expand the definition of what environmental education can and should be. And I think, you know, we see formal environmental education happening in classrooms across the country, and that is super important. But we also see a lot of kind of informal environmental education happening in so many different parts of the country. And that's really, it's such a huge opportunity, we think, in this moment to really kind of bridge divides, and importantly also to really kind of nurture well-being. You know, there are few things that are more powerful than spending time in nature to really kind of make us feel better or to navigate, you know, challenges that we're having. And so I think the example of Southside Blooms, you know, it is an environmental education program, but it's also so much more. You know, it's economic development, it's mental health, and it's building these really powerful bridges across the city of Chicago.
Keelan, what describe the impact that you hope your organization is able to make in your community? Because obviously you're also providing opportunities for the young people that you work with across, you know, the south and west sides of the city.
Yeah, I mean, we've been around for 11 years, so we've, you know, have a pretty strong track record of impact in the city at this point. You know, we have about 6 farms across the city representing about 10 acres of formerly vacant land that we've turned into productive farmland. For our flowers, you know, we have our Inglewood flower shop, and we're actually in the process of opening up a flower shop on the west side of North Lawndale this summer. We employ about 25 youth, you know, between the farm and the flower shop. You know, our youth are doing high-end events, you know, so this isn't just a very basic program. We are, our youth are doing events at the Field Museum, at McCormick Place, at the, you know, Ritz-Carlton, and everything in between. So the impact is very tangible. It's very concrete. You know, we have youth who've been working with us for 3 to 4 years, who started in, you know, at an entry level position in our youth program and, you know, worked their way up to management where they're making a solid middle class income at 19, 20 years old. So, you know, the work really does speak for itself. And a lot of that has really been, you know, due to unlocking the potential of our youth, you know, through the sustainability platform that we've built here at Southside Blooms.
That's exciting, especially for those young people who are able to earn those incomes that you talk about. James, what would you say are your biggest concerns right now for the state of our environment?
There are so many things to be concerned about. I think it truly is a, you know, we hear the word polycrisis. But for me, and I think for this movie, what we're really focused on is ensuring that we continue to make sure that we connect kids to nature and that everyone has access to environmental education, you know, not only so that, you know, future generations can be informed and have critical thinking, but, you know, to have access to these really powerful tools for healing. You know, it's something that we would love to see not be viewed as sort of a luxury or an add-on or something that's only accessible to, you know, certain groups or certain places, but environmental education being something that's really central to what it means to be educated.
Keelan, we've got 20 seconds left. Same question to you. Your biggest concerns for the state of our environment?
Well, I see a big opportunity in today's environment for communities that maybe haven't traditionally been represented in the environmental education movement. You know, I look at like our communities, for example, and many of the youth that we work with, they wouldn't necessarily be seen as like environmentalists or scientists, but they're really showing that a lot of these solutions are simple, are affordable, are accessible, and also are very impactful. So I think this will be a great opportunity to, you know, kind of redirect the spotlight to some of the more simpler solutions.
Of course, and that, letting people know that there are environmentalists in all communities. We'll have to leave it there. My thanks to Keelan Blackwell and James Parker. Congrats on the movie. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
After the break, we revisit our recent conversation with author Lovie Ajayi-Jones. Whether it's asking for a promotion or confronting the school bully, writer Lovie Ajayi-Jones has become an expert on overcoming fears and speaking up. Her books urge everyone to become what she calls a troublemaker or someone who pushes for positive change. She's guiding adults, teens, and lately, even little kids. Her latest children's book, Little Troublemaker, defends her name, encourages kids to stand up for themselves and their unique names. And joining us is the book's author, Lovie Ajayi-Jones, and I, too, share a unique name.
Yes.
So we're in the same club. Welcome back.
It is good to be in this good club.
It is good to see you. Okay, so before we talk about our names, what does it mean to be a troublemaker?
Oh, my gosh. I think to be a troublemaker in this world is to be somebody who wants to be a part of positive change, especially in an unjust world. If you're somebody who is challenging what's going on, you want to be a part of seeing it change. So that's what it means to be a troublemaker, to be the one who is the truth teller and the action taker.
Because sometimes people don't want to hear it. So you're making a little bit of trouble for them.
Yeah, but it's necessary. You know, like the late, great John Lewis said, we should be ready to make necessary good trouble. I think that's required of all of us.
Why do you think it's important that children learn to become a little troublemaker? Because I think we also teach kids something completely different. Don't get in trouble. Stay out of trouble.
Yeah, I think the biggest troublemakers are the little ones. Because at that age, they're young, they don't have any filter, and honestly, they're pure. And oftentimes, we will abuse the pure out of them, insult it out of them, or punish it out of them. And I think we actually need to encourage them to use their voice fiercely. Now, they can use it thoughtfully, right? Making trouble does not mean, you know, creating chaos. But you can do it thoughtfully. And I want the kids to know you can do it now, because we never got that message to do it now.
Right. The book looks at how to respond when people mispronounce your name, which never happens to me or you, especially when your name comes from, you know, a unique cultural background, right? Talk about, you know, what that can be like and sort of navigating being different and having a name that not everybody knows how to say.
Yeah, so many of us know what it's like to walk into the Six Flags souvenir shop and never see our names at all. And with that also comes the first day of school when your teacher mispronounces your name or they look down the roll and they go, ooh, this is hard. And we kind of carry those scars even if it's in the back of our mind. But I think it's really important for us to honor names, not just ours, but other people. So in Little Troublemaker Defends Her Name, my goal is to make sure kids recognize that you can actually insist on people pronouncing your name well, thoughtfully. You can stand up for it, and your name is always worth defending.
What's your advice on politely correcting someone? Because you do it frequently.
I have to do it frequently, right? That Ajayi always gets people confused. I always say, hey, that's actually not how you pronounce it. It's Ajayi. So you can actually stop people and say, you know what? It's okay. You did not get it right, but here's how you do it right.
Right. Because it falls on us, right? And then we're uncomfortable because we're making them uncomfortable. But really, it is okay to make that correction.
Give people a chance to get it right. If we always assume that they're going to get it wrong, then they actually will always get it wrong. So let's give them a chance to get it right and say, you know what? Here's a fix.
Books also include several Nigerian references.
Yes.
Such as jollof rice.
Uh-huh.
Nigerian yourself. How does your identity influence your work?
Oh my gosh, my identity is everything about my work because it influences how I even write. It influences the way I create this character. Like this character is this black girl with a fade who has a strong name. And that was important because I was that girl. You know, in coming to the U.S. when I was 9 years old, it was the first time I was ever othered. It was the first time I felt too different. And that's because I was Nigerian. So this girl's Nigerian identity is part of her. She has a little patch on her backpack with the Nigerian flag. And I've heard from teachers go, a kid went, I've never seen a book with jollof rice in it. And even that is an affirmation.
We also, you know, we don't frequently see a book, like you said, you know, this cute little girl, Lovey, she's got the fade, and we've got, you know, the illustrations in the book. Tell me about the importance of, you know, of the representation and getting the illustrations right.
Yeah, I want kids to see her and say, she looks like me, or she reminds me of my cousin, or, oh my gosh, I also can have a short haircut and still be confident and funny and humble and feel loved. That's the thing about little Lovey is, I also build joy into the way we illustrate this book. It is in the fabric of the way I wrote this book. I want her to always walk away feeling loved. So when kids close the pages, they go, oh, wow, she made a mistake, she grew from it, and she ended up having an amazing day.
This is your second children's book.
Yeah.
Little Troublemaker Makes a Mess is right here. It came out in 2023. What made you want to get into writing children's books?
Children need to be spoken to. They need to see representation. They need to feel seen, they need to feel heard, and that's actually my goal with this book series, is that I want kids to always move from the book feeling like they got a good time, they got a good lesson, and feeling good about even when they make mistakes. Because I think sometimes we define ourselves too much by the oops that we make. So the thing about little Lovey, she will always make a mistake, but she will always learn and grow.
The book, as we mentioned, they both follow little Lovey and her adventures. Are any of these, like, specific to your own childhood? Did you happen to make a mess in the kitchen, for example?
Oh, for sure, because I was overconfident. My problem was I thought I could do everything. So she also starts to learn, here are your boundaries. I understand your confidence, but you also need my help as an adult. So it's teaching ways for us to model, you know, you can be confident, but here's where you can learn more.
Can't let you go without, you know, getting a sort of your impression of the times we are living in and how you're using your voice. And, you know, as a black woman, I think a lot of folks, especially in this political season, are wondering, are black women taking a back seat now? Are they sitting down? Are they being quiet? Where are you on that?
We are not being quiet, but our fight is not always physical. I don't think we're necessarily the ones protesting. We need to be organizing with each other, creating mutual aid networks. We need to be doing other type of work. I think people are so used to Black women putting things on our back, on our shoulders, and our physicality. I think the fight of this moment for us is about us being in deeper community with each other and the people that we love, and also preparing ourselves for if we have to take on more responsibility because people are losing their jobs, people can't pay their rent or their mortgage. So I think Black women's job right now is, one, to take care of ourselves and then take care of each other.
What's next for you? More children's books? More go on?
Definitely. There's more Little Troublemaker coming. There's more books coming. And I'm teaching people how to write their own books through my book academy. So my whole job is to make sure that the words that need to get out, get out.
Okay. Levy Ajayi-Jones, it's a pleasure to have you in here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Again, the book is called Little Troublemaker Defends Her Name, something we know a little something about. Chicago native Patrick McCoy worked as an environmental scientist for the EPA for decades. In his free time, he documented the environment around him, taking pictures every day during much of the 1980s. A few years ago, there was an exhibition of his photographs at local gallery Wrightwood 659. It was an evocative look at gay Black men in Chicago during that pivotal decade and a window into a community that's often been overlooked and stereotyped. As Pride Month comes to an end, here's Chicago Tonight's Nick Blumberg with another look at that story.
Patrick McCoy grew up around pictures. His father was a painter and a photographer, but Patrick...
I didn't really want to become a photographer and work with all of the little dials and so forth.
Still, he liked taking pictures, working with a simple point-and-shoot through the 60s and 70s.
And one day, one of my friends who worked at Helix camera store, he said, you need to step up.
McCoy got a good 35mm camera. He didn't want to take classes, so he made a deal with himself.
To carry the camera with me every day, and every day I was going to take at least one photograph.
McCoy carried the camera around his neck everywhere, biking from his home in South Shore to his job in the Loop.
When I would go through all the different neighborhoods, invariably somebody would holler out to me, hey, take my picture.
Oh, and that was part of McCoy's deal with himself, too, that he'd take a picture of anyone who asked. At night, he'd develop them and carry them in his backpack the next day.
I would see some of those same people, and I would just give them their photograph. And it was like they were blown away.
McCoy got to know people, often taking their picture multiple times. Many of them were regulars at the Rialto Tap in the South Loop.
We used to call it the Star Wars bar because it had that look where there's all these kind of crazy people in there.
Everyone from people living in homeless shelters to downtown businessmen to drag queens. The crowd was mostly gay Black men.
For the Black people in the South Loop, it was kind of like Cheers.
McCoy never posed his subjects, allowing their personality to shine through.
The beauty of Black men that is beyond the prejudices and the stereotypes that have been promoted over the last 100+ years.
It's a slice of Black American male life that we don't see in art. You don't typically see them in museums.
Artist Juarez Hawkins curated the show. She's known McCoy for decades and helped him whittle down some 1,500 snaps to the 50 or so now featured. Themes started to emerge.
The guys on the bikes, the idea of Black men at leisure, definitely the hair and the fashion, because that in the 80s was really just nothing short of spectacular.
But as the 80s gave way to the 90s, McCoy felt less safe carrying his camera everywhere. Crack came into Chicago, and AIDS was taking a heavy toll.
There are people here in this little small selection of my photographs that were really dear to me, and they succumbed to the disease.
McCoy says seeing his photographs displayed like this comes with nostalgia and sadness, but also a sense of pride in what his work captures.
Seeing such beautiful imagery of that time period from a Black perspective. This is beautiful to me.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg.
As I mentioned, the exhibit happened a couple years back, but you can still find those photos by checking out the story on our website. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News, including our Chicago Summer Festival Guide. From street fests and art shows to outdoor concerts and cultural celebrations, we have got you covered. It is all at WTTW.com/festivals. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports educational initiatives in the legal profession.